Welcome to the latest edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, the Chief, Keith Fleming. With me this week, my good friend, my partner, the ravishing one, Ron L. How many belts have you ordered this week? Tinsley. What's going on, Ron L?
I wish I did, but no events this week. I'm kind of backing off of doing that, you know, besides it's the holiday season. But other than that, I'm doing all right. And, you know, some really exciting times. I'd like to say sorry to you guys that, you know, we missed you last week and didn't get you a Survivor Series recap. But unfortunately, you know, I was kind of a little jaded a bit on the entirety of the card, whereas, you know, the same things that the matches that we were looking forward to are pretty much just the highlights of the night.
Don't apologize to him, Ronel. It was Thanksgiving. We got stuff to do. Okay. Don't apologize. It's a free podcast. Why don't we start there? Or actually, before we start, I just want to remind everyone, the IB Sports Podcast Network is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. Obviously you can find this podcast, Team Turnbuckle Podcast, there. You got a Minute Fam, me and Joe Matz's weekly daily fantasy football podcast. I've been on the last couple of backdoor covers again with Alan, which we will continue doing that moving forward. He'll probably still handle most of the NFL by himself just because with fantasy, it's too much and I don't want to just give plays. But as he said recently, if he continues to win when I come on the podcast, I have to come on. Otherwise, I'm fired. So, but we do appreciate if you would subscribe to that, rate, review, and share. We won't spend, you know, basically any time on Survivor Series because obviously it was so long ago. I do want to talk about, though, the Charlotte Becky just real quick. I think their feud, and I know it's going to be blasphemous to people, is finally the heir apparent to Stone Cold Rock. And, you know, we've been waiting for so long. When is that next feud? When you got two top stars in the company, top of their game, both in their prime, like both have accolades, both have moments, and they're just going to go toe-to-toe for probably a 3-4 year window. And I think this is it. And that's no offense to Randy Orton, John Cena, but I just didn't feel like there was ever that kind of buzz behind them. The, you know, the CM Punk Cena thing didn't last long enough. Same thing for, you know, Daniel Bryan, you name it, Brock, whoever. I feel like this may now be that next in the lineage of these epic rivalries, which honestly in WWE we hadn't had in a while.
No, and I don't actually say that that would even be blasphemous. I mean, if we take into account the number of championships the two have held between them, the number of times that they've had to fight each other for said titles, they main evented WrestleMania together. Sure, yes, Ronda Rousey was involved, but those two were the mainstays that made that happen and that made that main event so big. So I wouldn't say that it would be blasphemous. I mean, quite honestly, we're not going to get the type, like we've always said, you're not going to get the kind of like Attitude Era or even Ruthless Aggression Era numbers just watching on the shows. But the way that these women are able to take their, whatever you want to call it, their feud, their rivalry, their beef, they can take it to interviews, they can take it on their socials. I mean, even on, they're being promoted even on ESPN, for goodness sakes. Now, that's a kind of reach that they wish they could have gotten back in the day. So, no, I don't think that that's a stretch to say that this is one of those huge rivalries.
Well, again, not one of them. I'm saying now that, like, it's up there. And it's just pretty cool that, you know, anybody who's listened to this podcast for a long time knows Mega Powers Explode is my favorite, you know, storyline in the history of wrestling. I think it's the best. It's the coup de grace, whatever you want to call it. This is a real life Mega Powers Explode because they really were friends, right? They really were brothers, sisters, whatever you want to call it. And now it's not just storyline. And it's the same story, right? Like Becky was jealous. That's what started this, right? And it just, I just love it. It's been great.
Yeah. The only difference is that they're not fighting over Seth.
Exactly.
Or a perceived notion.
Because women don't need no man to fight over. Okay. That's not what anybody wants to talk about right now. Did you hear there was a promo last week, Ronel, between one CM Punk and MJF.
Yeah, I think I may have heard a thing or two about that.
So just to recap, we're getting ready for Dynamite. It's a day before Thanksgiving. Honestly, I was chalking it up to, I mean, not that AEW would ever phone in a show, because you got to give them credit. They care about their product. They try to consistently make it great. But you're looking at, okay, we're opening with Punk QT Marshall. It's at, you know, it's in Chicago. And his music comes on, place goes nuts to the credit, and I hope it continues elsewhere, but at least in Chicago, they're still chanting CM Punk like crazy. And then MJF's music hit. And I was literally like, wait, what's going on here? Like, wait a minute. And I thought it was going to be one of those dumb things where he would go to the announce table, right, sit down, and maybe he'd talk smack during the match. Oh, no. He heads right to the ring and just proceeded to absolutely, particularly in the first half of that promo, eviscerate CM Punk. And I don't know if you felt this way, but for the first half, it felt like Ali, and again, sorry for the, you know, people get offended by comparisons, but with Punk, it felt like Ali in his later fights, where it's like, uh-oh, this guy that used to be unbelievable on the mic is now in with this young guy who is unbelievable on the mic, and he ain't got it no more. Did it not feel like Punk was really losing the first half of that battle? Like, his first exchange with him was pretty weak.
Yeah, no, I love that analogy, making it a boxing reference, because, yeah, it did look like he had to take a couple of rounds to get his legs under him, because MJF was on top of him, and it made for the best part when it came to later.
And it just continued from there. I think what most people, there's two big takeaways, excuse me, I should say, that I think most people have from this. If you don't, you should. A, MJF, I've been obviously on the MJF train from the get-go, but I've been very hesitant to say he is the best talker in wrestling. Like, I've always used the statement, he's one of the best, you know, for his age, he's as good as I've ever. He is the best talker and wrestler. To come out in front of that crowd, which you got to realize, that's Punk's home crowd. And even when Punk was getting in, especially in the second half, just some real zingers that we'll get into in just a minute, he took it all in stride. He never changes character. He always knows where he wants to go, and he's incredible. So that's number one. And number two, again, kudos to AEW for starting off the show with the best segment that there is and just letting their show be great. A lot of people would the only complaint I've seen so far is it too early for a CM Punk MJF feud? No, it was great. It was fucking awesome. It was a surprise. Nobody saw it coming. It probably wouldn't have been that electric if it wouldn't have been in Chicago. Maybe Punk doesn't react that way if it wasn't in Chicago. And then, oh, by the way, I have gotten onto them about overusing WWE and bringing them in. This is the way to do it, to where, honestly, it just didn't feel to me disrespected or unwarranted. Now, what Chris Jericho kind of did later, but this intersection between them, where there were so many references, did you catch them all, Ronel?
I'm pretty positive I caught them all. I don't have it down in front of me word for word, but.
So I've got them. Let's go through them real quick. So the first one was where he brought up the AJ Styles when he said, you don't want none, basically to CM Punk.
Yes. Yes, I did.
The best line of the night, without a doubt. Well, actually, we'll get to that. MJF then let her tell CM Punk he was always second best to John Cena and Triple H, which CM Punk came back, in my opinion, with just one of the all-time, you know. And again, I hope this wasn't a knock on The Miz and it was more of respect to a Miz, but basically calling MJF a watered-down Miz. You know, like, you're not as good as Miz. You think you're like this cool heel and you're just a poor man's Miz. Like, that's it.
Backhanded compliment.
Absolutely. Again, in the end, Punk said the only time you will be number one is if Tony Khan has a daughter and you marry her, which obviously we know.
Playoff home run. Turned on it. See ya.
I mean, obviously, that was, you know, quite a shot. And I mean, to me, though, like the MJF, the go to sleep line, I felt like was probably his most creative line. And obviously, CM Punk's was, you know, my poster on my wall, which was, you know, just fantastic. But for, I mean, for MJF to go out there and go, looking at your eyes, if anybody needs to go to sleep, it's you. I mean, I just, again, I can't get over that they did this. They let him go for like 25 minutes. Nobody knew it come. They didn't advertise it. They didn't get, you know, they didn't send tweets. They didn't do nothing. It's just like, if you're watching our show from the beginning, you never know what's going to happen. And it just, to me, felt like a Raw in the late 90s, Nitro, you know, in the mid 90s moment, which you just never get anymore.
Yeah. And it was absolutely, like, I remember when I finally got to commercial, because I stopped it on my playback, and I'm like, they just let those two dudes go for 25 minutes. And it was absolutely awesome.
And it didn't lead to a tag match, right, Ronel? That was the best part. It didn't lead to, hey, brothers.
Yeah, no, it was like, at least Punk already had something lined up. And they're like, oh, well, now after this brutal verbal MMA match that we just watched, now we have a wrestling match for you.
It, I mean, Punk found his footing, though, right? Like, I mean, don't you think that by the end, you saw a little bit of vintage Punk?
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching it, I was like, this is all that the hype that I've been waiting for. We needed Punk to really care about something and someone who's really going to tick him off. I thought that started happening with the Eddie Kingston match from the last pay-per-view. A feud like this, where there's going to be a build-up to their match, and we don't know when they're actually going to get into the ring, this is what I am really looking forward to seeing, because this is going to bring out all of that character that I only saw basically on videotape.
So you know when I think it's going to happen, right? And it would be brilliant, and because it's too long to pay-per-view is in March. They can't wait till March.
Yeah, they don't.
That first episode on TBS, do it. Main event it, get a rating, get people talking, book it. If you don't want to have a clear finish, fine. But let's. I mean, holy crap! You think some people are going to turn into that?
Heck yeah! As a matter of fact, you've got me wondering right now, because by the way it looks, this would come not too long after or before. No, after day one, right?
Yeah, it's like the, I think it's the first week of January, but obviously day one's on, I think, Saturday the first. So gotcha. It would be like the 5th.
No, it would be the 5th. Yes. Yeah, no, it would be a great response and absolutely a way to welcome themselves to TBS.
Any other big thoughts on this promo?
No, it was just, to me, it's just so unbelievable to see two guys who are really a master of their craft. And like, I just, like you said, you know, and I'm not going to apologize for the fact that you and I tend to agree on a lot of things, but you are absolutely right that MJF is absolutely the best thing on the mic right now.
And he's so young. I mean, that's what to me is so scary, is he's so young and he's only going to get better. I actually hope this leads to a Punk heel turn. I think it would be just amazing. It's, you know, MJF actually getting the better of him is what kind of turns Punk heel.
And it wouldn't be a bad time for him to take a first L.
Exactly. And I mean, again, they keep piling up the wins for MJF. This kid is, to me, he is the future of their company. No offense to Hangman, no offense to Darby. He could have a Ric Flair type heel run where you have him as champ for 2 years. He's not, people act like he's not great in the ring. He's pretty damn good in the ring too.
No, he's amazing in the ring. It just so happens to be overshadowed by the fact that he seems to get his entire gimmick. And he knows how to work all angles.
So the second thing off the top, The Undertaker made an appearance on Kevin Hart's Cold as Balls podcast, which, do people understand what this is? You have to sit in a tub of ice while you get interviewed.
Oh, Jesus. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've watched the Skip Bayless one. You literally have to get in a freezing, like cold, like the ice tubs that they take, and he interviews you while you're in there, which that's got to, you know, kind of make people say stuff probably they wouldn't normally say. I think it's brilliant. It's great. Kevin Hart's, he's something. So on it, he asked about the Mount Rushmore of wrestling. Of course, Undertaker started a shitstorm when, I'm going to go ahead and let me read the names first. Andre the Giant, Shawn Michaels, Stone Cold, and The Rock, which, I mean, granted, yeah, there's guys that you could say should be on there, but none of those are crazy. He's the fucking Undertaker. He could, if he's telling you those are the four greatest of all time, I'd probably listen. And also told a very cool story about how he, you know, said, look, I got to put this guy over talking about The Rock. If you get a chance, you should definitely listen to the interview. We've talked about our Mount Rushmores before, and it's got me thinking, and I think we're both people that we evolve, you know, we're not afraid to change our opinions. Right now, who would be your Mount Rushmore? And again, you do not have to hold to what you said before. This is as of right now. What is it? November 30th, 2021.
I don't remember who I said, but I'm sure I'm probably going to stand true to it. Somewhere in the neighborhood of Flair. I wanted, it used to be Hogan. And I think if I don't knock Hogan off just because of, you know, yes, I get it. Like everybody else knows, Hulk Hogan is not the greatest person to work with or be around. But he unfortunately has to stay up there. But so I have to have him share his spot with the worker who really earns his spot, which would be Randy Savage. And, you know, I saw that there were a couple of guys talking about, you know, the subjectivenesses of their own Mount Rushmores.
Of course.
But, yeah, so Flair, Hogan / Savage, Rock / Austin, Jericho, because I think, with the two that I had named that have two names to it, they needed one another to get themselves to the heights that they did. I mean, yes, Hulk Hogan was already carrying the company, but without that Savage feud for those 2 years, 2.5 years, and even further as it extended into WCW, he would never have been as big as he was. And same with Austin Rock. Like, I cannot mention The Rock without mentioning Stone Cold Steve Austin or vice versa. So those two belong together as well. And, you know, I'm sticking with the Chris Jericho thing. I mean, if I were being honest, I really wish I could take Hulk Hogan off. But like, if we're talking pro wrestling, it's impossible because wrestling would not have reached the heights it did without him.
Well, I'm going to say that it's not impossible anymore because The Undertaker just gave us a pass. Because when he didn't have him on there, I'm like, shit, he ain't got him or Flair on there. So now all bets are off. Because, I mean, Undertaker is, by all accounts, one of the most respected guys in the history of the business. If you're saying my Mount Rushmore, and again, we're going by, you know, whatever criteria you're going to say it is. For me, it would be Ric Flair. He's the one, to me, even more than Hogan. And this is no disrespect to Hogan. Hogan, from a commercial size, and growing the business, absolutely. But Flair is the guy people still talk about. And that's no disrespect to Hogan, but I mean, wrestlers, movie stars, rappers, you name it. Flair is still the pinnacle.
Yeah,
Flair
Hogan rap song.
Yeah. It's not even a rap song. It's just, I mean, it's guys doing dances after scoring touchdowns. I mean, like, it's, you know.
After football practices.
It's just.
Give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Flair is beyond wrestling. And then, oh, by the way, I think, for what he did at the time, he has to be considered one of the greatest in-ring wrestlers of all time. As well, he did our matches like fucking 30 nights in a row when he was on tour. So Flair's on there. You know, I'd want to put Brett on there. But if one of those guys goes on there, it's got to be Shawn. So I've got Flair and Shawn. And then I'm going to cheat with you, and I'm going to do the Stone Cold Rock as one. And then I think you got to put Undertaker on there. I don't – I mean – he's the Taker. I mean, he is, in my opinion, and doesn't get enough credit for dragging WWF's almost dead corpse through the 90s. He changed personas. the streak became something that saved in a lot. I mean, think there's some really bad WrestleManias after the great stretch between, I think it was like 17 through 22 were all bangers, that there were some pretty bad ones. Oh, but you said we had this unbelievable match with Taker, right? And that kind of sold the card. And I just think that he belongs on there. And it says a lot about him, again, that he didn't even bring himself up. So, again, those always go along. We'll post this in the group because I do want to hear what people say about, you know, their Mount Rushmores.
And, you know, I love if we can just go back and touch on that. And thank you for saying that, because that really does give me pause. And who knows, as I chew on that and think on that a couple more years down the road, I may, you know, wind up doing the same thing, because I think of all the times when I was just a kid suspended, you know, not knowing that this was all predetermined, etc., and how much I thought of Hulk Hogan, and just knowing the treatment, especially referencing the shoot interview that you had posted in the group, which was amazing. And he had talked about the treatment that Hogan had given him, and basically trying to work his, just do his little nuances to keep his spot, basically. And, you know, keep a young kid down who's had, came in under, like, Undertaker's arrival was so immense. And knowing that he was going to be a big deal. Compare that to when Undertaker is the veteran, and he says during this interview he realizes that, you know, this is this kid's night, talking about The Rock, realizing that The Rock has it, and said to him in the match, "Nah, take it, kid, you know, it's your night." That's amazing that he recognized that, and like, this is what's best for the business, not me taking this win. This kid is going to be a big deal, and if I give him this win, that's a seal of approval that he's going to do something. And he went ahead and did that. That's the kind of stuff I love hearing about our performers, and that's one of the reasons that Taker was a locker room leader for so long.
Well, not only that, and again, this will be the last time I'm kind of saying this, but he didn't even have to lose to put guys over. Two of his biggest star making moments were Jeff Hardy in a ladder match for the world title on Raw, where he made Hardy look like $1 million. And obviously John Cena, you know, that wasn't even a match, but just by him having that match with Kurt Angle, and for him that, you know, give that handshake. And it just, again, I think the Taker is probably going to, as years go by, getting forgotten about, much like Andre. I mean, in fairness, and it just, I don't think it can ever be understated what he did for the company, what he did for WWE, and just the draw he was for a long time. And one of the few guys that could draw without being champion, because that is not an easy task. That's not something very many people can do. Really quickly, I just want to, it's been reported Triple H had a cardiac event, which is really terrifying, back in September. It kept him from returning to work at WWE, mainly NXT. In his absence, this makes my heart just grow 1,000 times with him and Sean's relationship, but HBK has been named the vice president of talent development and has helped fill Hunter's shoes in his absence. Just real quickly, have you noticed a difference in the time he's been on? Because obviously I didn't even know this was going on until just now.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know about how much he's doing remotely or what kind of input, but to me, you can tell with this whole rebrand, a lot of it's got Vince's hands on it. And I'm just hoping that, you know, when the time comes for him to come back, that hopefully I get it that now we're, you know, we don't have these guys and gals coming in who maybe had a following from the indie scene, or they had a gimmick, or they had something that was working for him. So now he's going to have to come back in and build some of these boys and girls from the ground up. But considering what he's been able to do, you know, with the old NXT, I'm hoping that, you know, once he, you know, prayers for a full and speedy recovery, that he'll be able to, you know, at least get the Rainbow brand a better audience and a better show.
I've been trying to say this from the get-go. NXT is basically OVW all over again. They're just trying to build stars now. This, it's not, I mean, yes, it's on TV because they pretty much have to at this point, but you can tell they're changing their formula. And I mean, to be honest, it's smart. You can't out AEW in work rate. You're just not going to be able to. Look at the matches they're putting on a week to week basis. Where you can outdo them is with the Roman Reigns and the Big E's and the Drew McIntyres and these big, you know, again, not to, you know, say something straight out of a WWE employee's mouth, but they're trying to make superheroes. They're, they're trying to make these bigger than life characters. And it will work too, but you got to tell better stories, which has been the issue. Final thing for off the top, and just the latest example of Tony Khan just needs to, stop tweeting, quit press. What did, don't press send. Thank you. On Twitter, he responded to a post stating Adam Cole would be better utilized in WWE than he has in AEW thus far. It's false equivalence, Will, Tony wrote. They try to move the line with ridiculous points, aiming to dispute the credibility of something credible. Adam is over as fuck. He's pushed. Has many more young fans watching than he did on Tuesdays. Would we argue if they said water wasn't wet? Shut up. Shut up, Tony. Shut up. The best part about AEW is you have a billionaire owner who, for the most part, stays the fuck out of it. Shut up. I understand he wants to defend it, but I mean, really, he should know that it's internet trolls. I think that Adam Cole's point, and this is the bigger thing, he tweeted, no matter where I've gone, no matter how long it takes, I've always become the guy, always. And to those that are saying he's not being used, he is being used. Are they using him, in my opinion, in the best way possible? No. Would he be in a more prominent role on NXT WWE? Probably. But he's more loved in AEW. And that's going to mean something. Look at Hangman Page. And that, to me, that's the poster boy. That's the example. Hangman was over. He was hot. And they waited and they waited and they waited. And it paid off. And at least for right now, AEW fans, and again, they should, they trust AEW is going to do right by their stars overall. And so there's no need to hit the panic button. But he is, I mean, maybe Hangman's more over. But when he does the Adam Cole baby in the ring, he's a fucking heel. And the place goes nuts. So it's hard to argue with anything when he's that loved. But I don't love that they went right back to you. I think it would have been way more interesting to have him in and immediately feud with them. But it looks like we're headed to that. And again, as I just have learned in AEW, be patient. They usually pay it off.
Yeah, and that's my feeling behind the entire thing. It's like, guys, Punk, Danielson, Cole have all been here less than 4 months. We can't just get all of these guys and throw them all, shoot into the middle of the biggest scenes or whatever. Punk had his own way and he went and he's going fine. Yes, I was one of those people who got a little antsy, but I'm starting to see the payoff. Cole already has a storyline waiting for him when Kenny Omega comes back. He loves to have a lot of matches and be a workhorse in the ring, and he's fantastic. You know, people say that, you know, he's having all these matches with guys that he shouldn't be. He's doing what everybody else is doing and coming in and putting over the guys who were already here. Relax, enjoy the show. One of the things that we love as wrestling fans is, don't we love long-term storytelling? Does everything have to be in such a rush to get to the end of something? No.
Forget the rush. Just how about we not have the same match over and over again, right? And that's something that I think AEW doesn't get enough credit for, is they continue to, I don't want to say build stars, but make people relevant, because it is rare. And it's like thinking about MJF Punk and how exciting that is, because we know maybe this will be a feud. Maybe they will have 3-4 matches, but there's a chance in AEW, and it's something great that they do. Well, they'll have this banger, and then God knows when we're going to get to see it again. And that's how ultimately you sell stuff and how you keep stuff fresh.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. You know, it's kind of like one of the things that I saw in an interview from Bryan Danielson, you know, he's talking about how he's upset that he's not going to be facing Kenny Omega immediately right now, just because number one, he enjoyed doing that match. And number two, it's one of those matches he wanted to do. But he's like, at the same time, I understand I cannot just do that. And of course, you know, in this instance, the person I want to fight has to take a little time off. So if Lord willing that we can get there again, they're going to give it to us.
All right, let's move on to the superlatives of the week. Go ahead and give me your wrestler on the rise.
My wrestler on the rise this week is Austin Theory, surprisingly. I was a little disappointed because you just didn't really know what was going to happen once they brought him up to the main roster, breaking him up with Johnny Gargano. And yeah, his character with being a selfie dude is maybe a 6-7 years too late to be super trendy, but enough to make him a dickish heel. And just what he was able to do by thinking stealing Vince's $100 million egg would be a great idea and so on and so forth, and yet it now gets him into a position where he gets a rub shoulders with the boss. And more than less, at the very least, it's going to get him a little more airtime for the next month or so. So congratulations to the dude I share a birthday with, Austin Theory. You are my wrestler on the rise this week.
Yeah, Sam called that a long time ago, that this guy, mainly because of his look, his age and everything, and he's good in the ring. He was like, he's going to be a star in WWE, and looks like we're heading that way. For me, it's the anti-look-like-a-star in WWE. Sami Zayn, Mr. Conspiracy himself, wins the Battle Royal. I would love, you know, we got tickets to the January 1st show. I would love it if it's Sami Zayn versus Reigns for the title. I think he's going to get screwed out of it, and it's going to be Lesnar Reigns, which I'm not going to complain about that either. But it's just going to continue to build the story. Sami is, to me, one of those guys. They don't utilize him enough. He's unbelievable. He's great on the mic. His character is unique. He's one of those guys I just wish they'd let him go, because he reminds me a lot of Daniel Bryan right before he really took off, because everything he's involved with was good. He made something without, I forget which one of the Pauls, because they're both douche brothers, but whichever one of the Paul brothers, he made that entertaining. And when you can do that, you got some talent. So Sami Zayn is definitely my wrestler on the rise.
I love how dedicated to his character he is.
And he looks like Fidel Castro, a white Jewish Fidel Castro, but still. Wrestler on the slide, Damian Priest. Anybody listening to the podcast knows I'm not a fan. They're not doing him any favors. I don't know what's going on. It's like the worst tween act ever. They don't know if he's a face or a heel. Make the dude a heel. Like, he actually was a good heel in NXT, make him a heel, but it's costing him. And it says so much that both of the wrestlers on the slide for us are title holders. Go ahead, Ron, who's yours?
Yeah, and, you know, I was totally with you there too, because, and I've been one of the biggest Damian Priest supporters on this show, and unfortunately, I got to agree with you, only to be seconded to me by our world heavyweight champion, Big E. I love Big E. I absolutely do. I just don't like the way that with his title reign, it's like he's constantly looking like the prey instead of the predator. And the way they're setting it up, and don't get me wrong, I enjoy Seth Rollins, I enjoy KO, they're all phenomenal. Just the way that they've got Big E right now, they got him looking really, really, gosh, wimpy, I guess, for lack of a better word. And it's just kind of a shame for a guy walking around at 290, the way that 290 looks, that it's come to this.
I'm going to give it a month. And the reason I say that is I think one of two things is going to happen at the January show, because I think they believe in Big E, is either A, he's going to have his Reigns moment at Mania, where he's going to beat the shit out of both of those guys and dominate that match and win clean, obviously. Or B, he's going to get cheated out of the title. He's going to win the Royal Rumble a week later, and he's going to challenge Roman Reigns at Mania. And he's the kind of guy that I believe he could build that up. It's the underdog who, look, you know, I had it. I had my title stolen in a triple threat match. He cannot even get pinned and lose his title. I still believe in Big E, but I do agree with you that they're not helping him by not really giving him a guy he's shooting with. You know, it would be one thing if it was Rollins, it'd be one thing if it's KO, but it's just really confusing and difficult to book when it's all three. My face of the week, Liv Morgan. I owe you an apology because Liv was rough a few weeks ago. Actually, I don't owe her an apology. I jumped the gun because she was really bad. She was nervous. I mean, I should have thought about it. That was her biggest moment she had, and she came off really nervous. We know it's scripted. The backstage promo where she eventually slugged Becky, incredible. I love the way she's been just showing more and more confidence. And I may not totally get it, but the crowd loves her. And she is, I mean, it's going to make things interesting because she's one of the few people I've seen that people like legit boo Becky when she's interacting with Liv. And there's not very many people on the roster that it happens with. So Liv Morgan's my face of the week.
Good call, man. I've always liked Liv, even from back in the days of the Riot Squad. And one of the things that we didn't actually, you know, well, never mind. My face of the week this week is RK-Bro. For me, outside of Liv, it was really hard to find a really shining face moment. But those two dudes, like, I thought that they were about to get into the part of the story where Randy's about to start getting really, really frustrated. And no, they went the other way where Riddle just did something to completely endear himself to Orton, went out, kept his focus in his match, even wound up having Randy do the freaking Bro Derek right afterwards. These dudes, they're just
seeing Orton in that wig. How awesome was that?
That was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Just seeing this side of Randy Orton, I just can't stop saying that I just love seeing Randy Orton having fun out there, because you can tell in how he's working, he's just having a blast right now. So yeah, RK Bro.
Sam may end up calling two of the best shots in a long time. Obviously, when everybody was panicking about Hangman, he said stay there. He's been saying from the get-go, the more interesting story is Riddle turning on Orton. And the way they're portraying Orton, I think he may be right. I think that may be what we get, is Riddle's the one that strikes. And I just, that would be amazing. For the Hill of the Week, I got to just go ahead and lump this in with promo. Bryan Danielson, wow. Like, just wow. I'm now sorry for the people that say that WWE held him back in a lot of ways. WWE held him back in a lot of ways. Who would think a guy this small could be that terrifying? And I mean, with the chops and the kicks and just the I mean, he is just the stomps, which he kicked Colt Cabana's tooth out, obviously not on purpose. And then how good is this guy as a heel? And I'm talking about just as the performer, to then get on a mic. And that's why it's my promo of the week, even with MJF Punk, and go, I kicked your freaking teeth out. And I'll do the same thing to you, Hangman. Wow. Like, just unbelievable stuff. There were some people that were like, why would they turn Brian heel? Do not forget, Brian had two unbelievable heel runs in WWE with both the No and obviously the Fickle, the Earth Champ. And this is an iteration I love even more. And he's only helped by the fact that AEW guys are so small. He looks like he's on steroids. He looks huge. And I think it was Sam. I was talking to somebody on the phone, and they're like, it's not he's really any bigger, because I was like, he's juicing. It's just he's fighting guys that are a lot smaller. Therefore, it makes him look a lot bigger. But either way, I mean, obviously, I know the Punk MJF is the promo of the week, but I think Bryan Danielson deserves a lot of credit for that, and he's definitely my heel of the week, and I know you agree as well.
I do, and to even double down on it, the fact that when he's thrown his submission in the last couple of weeks, going into the Nate Diaz flex pose before they tap, as soon as I saw the Nate Diaz, I was like, oh my God. The only thing that I'm bothered about is that there seems to be no rhyme or reason to his heel turn other than just being an anti-Hangman Page or because wanting the title. That aside, seeing this, it's like watching before the Kofi run. He was, like you had said, put on some of the best work I had seen out of him. And, you know, according to smarts on the internet and other guys, that, you know, this is the type of guy he was back in ROH. And quite honestly, if this is what he's going to give us for the next year until, you know, maybe the story comes that it's time for another face turn, give me this all day, every day. Especially,
and don't forget too, Ronnell, though, that he doesn't have the history, right? Like, he's coming into this organization. It's, I'm Brian Danielson. So I actually think that I understand what you're saying if you're looking at, you know, what we know about him. But if you look at just what he's done in AEW, all his actions have been heels, right? And every time he has a chance to prove it, he's a heel. His wrestling style, everything. So, you know, just I say just keep, you know, giving it time. And again, I know it's hard to do, but try to separate what happened before. And let's literally go from when he showed up, you know, fought Kenny Omega, et cetera, moving forward.
He looked like a bully against Evil Uno, who was much bigger than him.
He looked like a bully at times in the match against Miro.
Yeah. It's just amazing that, you know, at that size, you're still just phenomenal job. Phenomenal job, Dan.
The Dan Severn of wrestling. I do real quickly, too, want to mention for the heel of the week, KO, for the way he got into the title match on January 1st. I love smart heels. Yeah, I know people listen to podcasts know that. I love that he went out, knew he had to win this match versus Big E in order to get into the main event. And he spent the entire match taunting Seth Rollins because he knew Seth's a fucking moron and he would hit him and he'd win it. And for all that to happen, I love it. I love it. That's good storytelling. That's how you get a DQ finish that makes sense. And everybody wins. Big E did not, you know, technically lose a match. It was a disqualification. He didn't have anything to do with it. KO gets the win. He gets in the main event. And it shows that Seth Rollins is unstable, which everything that he's been doing so far shows Seth Rollins is not all there. Real quickly, storyline you need to pay attention to. Go ahead.
I really hate doing this. When is we going to get to the point where any title outside of the WWE Championship or the Universal Championship mean absolutely nothing at all? Bad enough, two of those title holders were on the slide this week. They're doing Damian Priest no favors, just like you said. The Intercontinental Championship has lost all the luster that had been built.
I don't hate the Shinsuke run, to be honest. I'm with you on the Priest.
But nor do I, but it's like they're not really giving Shinsuke enough in terms of challengers. The women's tag team titles. I wanted to put Zelina and Carmella on the rise, but it's like nobody cares about those titles at all.
Sam, I mean, Ronald, to be honest, they don't have the roster. And this is the problem when you cut all these people. And I think to your point, maybe you're onto something. Maybe you should only have the two big titles, tag titles, and get rid of those secondary, because then the championship matches are obviously always going to be fresh. And then they don't have the crutch of just saying, well, it's a title match. No, build another match with a feud, like build it with a story. And I think in the long run, that would help. But it is really kind of sad to see that. For me, the storyline you need to pay attention to is just, where does AEW go from here? I mean, the last two Wednesdays, opening with Hangman with his title, to have, you know, Bryan Danielson come down, turn heel, and then follow it up with the CM Punk MJF. Holy shit. Like, I guarantee at 8:00 tomorrow, I will have tonight when you're listening to this, I will have my television on TNT ready to watch AEW. You got anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Just the podcast network, guys, just dropped a fresh You Got Minute Fam on Tuesday. Like you said, there's Ewan Allen with the backdoor cover, Ewan Joe DFS. Rate, subscribe, share. Drop those 5 stars and some comments for us. And of course, the Facebook groups, IB Entertainment, IB Sports.
If you have not watched the Punk MJF promo in its entirety, and I'm talking about since the first time you watched it, because the first time, if you're like me, you're just in shock. Go back and watch it. AEW has it up on their Twitter, a bunch of different locations, their YouTube. It's worth seeing again. I will, by next time we get on this, I'm going to try to go back and remember the last promo that I was that juiced about. I know it's been at least a decade. It's just unbelievable stuff. Sorry we spent so much time talking about it, but it was great. But it was the best. But for the Chief Keith, the Ravishing One, Ron L. Tinsley, Team Turnbuckle, we'll see you guys soon.